Hi, I'm Tom Newell. Welcome to Family Sports Life Today. We're bringing together parents, coaches, and athletes to talk about having a better sports experience, better family connections, and a better sports life for our kids.
And I'm Coach Guy Perry, and whether we're talking about elementary, middle school, or high school sports, whether you're an experienced coach or just getting involved with your kid's team, Family Sports Life Today is the place to talk about sports and learn.
Guy, here we are in the spring, and kids are already trying out in the mud infields of the King County Parks and Recreation, and I'm sure across other plateaus in suburban areas and urban areas. And one of the things that comes to mind from my own experience, and perhaps you can relate to this as well, is that when you have seasonal sports, when you go from indoors to outdoors, it's a whole different physical activity, okay? Biomechanically, the coordination and the drills for skills are different, and there's different eye-hand coordination or eye-foot coordination and balance and what have you. And probably the most critical part of this transition into an outdoor activity, all right, from winter, are the coach models. And one of the things that I felt that we could touch on is if there are some parent coaches out there that are going to assume the responsibility of becoming a lead coach or an assistant coach for soccer or baseball or softball, we want to help you with some reminders here. And I think that between Guy and myself, we're going to be able to enlighten you on how different it is than coaching an indoor activity such as basketball. But Guy, why don't you just kind of develop this storyline that we're going to discuss today?
Well, Tom, a lot of the coaches are going to come. They're going to be all jacked up because all of a sudden they're coaching. Maybe they didn't coach basketball or an indoor sport, and they're going to come, and they're hopefully going to be very prepared, but they may not understand the transition that the kids are going through from one sport to another. So they have to walk into it with a lot of patience because, as you briefly mentioned, you know, there's going to be different drills that they're going to be doing that are going to involve different hand-eye coordination and different thought process, different footwork. All of that, and I know baseball is, you need to have extreme patience. I would imagine it's the same in soccer. But if you're a volunteer coach, you've got to help your team with a parent or two. The kids need teachers for helping them get through their mistakes early on.
You know, one of the things that I always emphasize when I do coaches training is to get to know the participants on your team, you know their strengths and weaknesses, especially related to whether or not they practice on their own. It's just really important because they're not going to have any confidence. It's going to be shot in the beginning, especially since the weather has deterred and has defeated the opportunity to develop any confidence because either snow or rain or muddy grass fields, what have you, and what happens is now they have their tryouts or now they have their team practice, and the kids going out on the field are really, really nervous about, you know, the intimidation factors such as live pitching and a fly ball, or the coach throws the ball up in the air and they have to catch the ball. I personally really believe that when it comes to Little League baseball, especially kids playing for the first time, they haven't had an opportunity to practice or they don't have a parent model or a sibling to practice with. I really like taking tennis balls and old tennis balls and go ahead and spray paint them white and then take a red marker and outline the seams of the tennis ball and give the kids an opportunity to learn how to catch a tennis ball first. That way, you know, if they all of a sudden get nervous, the ball's coming down and they have their mitt up and then they close their eyes. If it hits them in the head, it's not the baseball, it's a tennis ball, it doesn't hurt as much. And I say that from experience. I saw my son's team about 20 some odd years ago practicing and the coach was hitting fly balls using regular baseballs, you know, and they're a little bit soft, but they're still a hard core. And in the middle, and it ended up where there was one kid, he was running under the ball and he had his head up, he had his mitt up. And then all of a sudden he just froze, and he wasn't sure where to put the mitt, and it hit him right smack square on the top of his noggin and left the most unbelievable bruise. You could hang a hat on it sideways if he'd been over. And I thought about it at that time. I said, you know what, if I were ever a volunteer baseball coach, I would probably get as many tennis balls as I could and paint them white and then outline the seams with red ink, you know, the marker pen, and then have the kids warm up with those balls, all right, and develop confidence. And even from a standpoint of hitting ground balls, you know, on the infield, not hard, but just to get them used to, you know, not being afraid of a hard ball, so to speak. Now, you don't do that with Babe Ruth League level players, you know, 14, 15, 16-year-olds. I'm talking about kids who are just starting out. And you may only use it for one or two practices. You can bring in the baseball at the end. That would be nice. Now, when it comes to soccer, I'm a firm believer for young kids that they ought to use a beach ball. You know, they have soccer balls that are actually have seams that appear to be a soccer ball. And the reason for that, I think kids that are 6 to 8 years old, you know, using a beach ball, the same size as a soccer ball, used soccer ball, that's going to allow them to be able to have confidence in learning how to dribble, how to pass, and what have you. Because one thing about the weather is that when it's cold and kids are out there and their toes are freezing and they're kicking a soccer ball that's also got this patented leather on it, you know, that gets hard. And so it really makes it difficult for the kids to develop confidence, and they go, oh, I got to kick this ball now, or I got to dribble it. It hurts my foot. And so it just, it sets up a lot of kids. And it's not that we're trying to, you know, how do I want to say this? Give them a thumb to suck on here and say, oh, woe is me. We're just trying to help the kids understand, and their parents understand where they can help them develop success.
Well, it's a good way to ease into it, too, and I like the suggestions of using balls that are a little softer, because if you go out and use the harder ball, the baseball and the soccer ball, you're going to kill their confidence, because they're not going to have a chance to gain any confidence, because they're going to be so fearful of getting hurt by the hard ball or hurting themselves kicking the soccer ball. It won't be fun.
Right.
And I think one thing that the coaches need to do a good job, and I know that a lot do, but you always have to remember you have to ease into the transition of a sport. You have to ease into it.
Right.
And that's why I was mentioning earlier, you need to have a lot of patience.
Yeah, no, you're right. The other thing is moms and dads and kids, you know, understand this, okay? Just because you scored 20 goals last spring with your pair of shoes when you're 10 years old, okay, and now you're 11, or you hit 6 home runs with your baseball rubber cleats, okay, and you're 13 years old, parents, please check the shoes when they put them on. One thing I know about kids is that they all have superstitions, and they'll put the shoes on, okay, because they can relate to the experience of, you know, I really did well with these shoes. The problem is that the toes push up against the end to the front part of the shoe, and now what happens is it allows their toes to be in a flex position up, and so there's no give. So when they plant their foot to change direction, or they're stepping off or what have you, there's almost an abrasion that occurs. You know, they can get blisters on the top of their knuckle of the toes themselves. They can get ingrown toenails. They can sprain their toes. You always hear about turf toe. You know, I can tell you, football players are the worst when it comes to wanting shoes that are really tight. It amazes me to see football players in the NFL and college, they tape their shoes because they, you know, they think they're Tinkerbell or something. I don't know. They feel that if they're completely secure, it's a part of their body. And so you'll see a lot of athletes that wear tight shoes, and they have their toes are scrunched. You know, I mean, they're almost like hammer toes. So parents, please, there should be close to a quarter of an inch play to allow the foot to grow into that shoe, okay? Not a half inch, quarter inch, or half inch would be fine. If your son or daughter is going through a period where they're starting to grow again and you sense it, then, you know, give a half inch, because I guarantee you within that first, maybe 5-6 weeks of the activity, you'll see that they've grown maybe an inch or so. Their foot is also growing. And I just think it's a really important discipline to remember when it comes to equipment.
And the other thing about that, Tom, just to jump in here, is that you, I know it's really hard to look at a shoe size of a kid that's playing basketball in February to look at the shoe that they're going to be using in March to be on the soccer field or the baseball field. But if you let your child go out there in that smaller shoe, you're going to be putting new shoes on them mm-hmm. in the middle of the season, and you're going to create the same sorts of problems trying to work in the shoe as
right.
well. So if you can get a read on that, the earlier the better is probably the better way to go there.
Well, one thing that I know from my own children's experience is that for some reason they don't believe that they're getting bigger and taller. And so when it comes to changing sports and activities and they go outdoors, it really is funny because they always want to wear the clothes that they had the year before. And I thought it was kind of funny because the kids themselves have confidence in their apparel and equipment. And it goes with a baseball mitt, too. I mean, Dad, just because Ichiro has a mitt that's, an outfielder's mitt that is almost a foot and a half larger than their fingers, and it weighs about 2 pounds, don't think that's going to make your son or your daughter a great outfielder, okay? Take your son in, take your daughter in, when it comes to softball, let them put the glove on and get comfortable with it. Take one of the softballs in the store. I mean, I'm a firm believer in Played Against Sports. That's that recycled the sporting goods store that has mitts, that people end up reselling and what have you. And the reason Played Against Sports is good is because the for baseball especially, because it is such a seasonal activity, equipment does, it's only used minimally, for maybe 100 at-bats, for a baseball bat. The mitt, there could be a left fielder in Little League Baseball. He'd go 3 years, and the only thing he catches are mosquito bites, and not any fly balls. So I think that, you can get a really good deal. You don't have to buy a
it's name. It's all worked in for you.
Yeah, a name player mitt, okay, to make your son believe that he's going to be the next Major League Baseball star. One of the things that I think is really important is that the coaches should find out, not only the strengths and weaknesses, but what kids have their own ball, whether it's a soccer ball, a softball, the regulation type baseball that they use for that level, is to make sure that the coaches meet each parent so that they can find out whether or not there is a support model there aside from practicing, once or twice a week. I just think that kids are set up to fail in spring sports if they don't have a ball to practice by themselves, where they can throw the ball up in the air and catch it, or they can go ahead and take a soccer ball and go to a park and dribble a ball and learn how to dribble with their right foot and their left foot. And they don't necessarily have to try to score against a goal, but they could kick it against a fence to learn the mechanics of attacking a goal. And I just think that if a coach is going to take the time to, as a volunteer coach, to be a lead person with kids, he's got to have good parent assistant coaches that will volunteer, that think like he does in terms of what you said earlier, great patience and encouragement,
right,
and be a positive model to follow. But the kids themselves need to have their own equipment. If they don't have their own equipment, then they're being set up to fail. I really believe that. I've seen it in basketball so often, and it's like a security blanket. If I'm playing baseball and I got my own ball, even though we're going to practice, at least I have my own ball. I'm going to have it in my bag, and I can just, until the coach shows up, I can play catch with my friend or I can play catch with myself on that. Thanks for joining us. If folks listening have a question or comment on this or any other Family Sports Life Today program, please give us a call and we'll try to use it in a future episode. We're at 206-202-6224. That's 206-20-COACH. 20-COACH. Or send us email. Our email address is familysportslifetoday@gmail.com.
And please visit our website at familysportslifetoday.com. You can listen to these programs online or subscribe and download them to your iPod or other MP3 players. If you subscribe, you will automatically receive future episodes.
Hey, coaches.
Hey, parents.
Hey, kids. Thanks for listening. Take care and have a great family sports life today.